experience group. I don't know how much I could add to your experience. Of course, as Srila Prabhupada said, good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. Ravindra Sarup Prabhu and I have spoken about 64 rounds, 1 lakh of names, and that is our mission today, our service. But I thought I'd mention a little about different figures of rounds, because the question has come up. You know, the Gaudiya Math, we've heard different things, like you must chant 64 rounds, but then we've even heard of preachers in the Gaudiya Math giving initiation to devotees who only chant 4 rounds. Or they may not even be chanting 4 rounds, but when they get Harinam initiation, they vow to follow 4 rounds. So we wanted to clarify it. So a group of us, Tamal Krishna Goswami, Burijan Prabhu, I went to visit Tripurari Swami and Narasingha Maharaj, who used to be Jagat Guru Swami. And what they heard from Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj was that there were actually 4 standards in the Gaudiya Math. If someone was very busy in service, he was to chant at least 4 rounds. If someone had a moderate amount of service, he could chant 16. And if someone didn't have much service, or to put it in other terms, his service was to chant, then he would chant 64 rounds at least. From Srila Prabhupada's account, when he was in Grihastha Ashram.
Excuse me, you said there were 4 standards? That's 3.
Oh, I didn't mean to say there were 4. Did I say 4? No, 3.
Three. There was the standard for the householders, which was don't starve the mala.
Well, Prabhupada chanted 16.
He was a householder.
Yeah. And he said he would chant 4 before breakfast, 4 before lunch, 4 before dinner, and 4 before rest. And that way he would be sure to get in his 16 rounds. We can make similar calculations with 64 rounds. So many before lunch, so many before breakfast or whatever. But Prabhupada was, once he fixed the minimum of 16, he was quite consistent about the figure of 16 minimum. And in one purport to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the verse from the prayers of the demigods to Krishna in the womb says that well, it's a prayer to the Lord who's incessantly friendly to the fallen souls, and great acharyas adopt the method of taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna to cross the ocean of nescience. But they're so merciful, they leave the method by which they crossed for other devotees to follow. And the Lord is so merciful that he accepts the method that the acharyas have left, utilized, and at the same time left behind. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions, you know, chanting 16 rounds following the four principles. And he says, these are bona fide instructions. So that's our minimum. But today, we have the special opportunity that our service today, our main service today, is just to chant. Of course, the focus of our service has been the holy name ever since we got here, hearing about the holy name, discussing about the holy name. But today our main service is to chant the holy name. Come to that figure of 64 rounds at least. So it's a great opportunity. We're relieved of the burden of having to talk with all due respect, having to listen to others talk. We're just relieved of that whole interaction, verbal interaction, so that we can really focus on our relationship with the holy name, our like exclusive time with the holy name, get the mercy in whichever form it comes. I liked the statement the other day. One of the devotees said that he likes chanting 64 rounds even though he doesn't have taste.
I was going to make a t-shirt. I have no taste, but I like to chant.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard, but the result is wonderful. So one could like to do it even though he doesn't have taste, because the results are so wonderful. And there's no limit to our relationship with the holy name. There's no limit to the mercy we can get from the holy name. There's no limit to what we can learn from the holy name, learn about ourselves, as well as Krishna and his devotees. I think of one statement that His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami made, that as you advance in Krishna consciousness, it becomes more difficult, but it's not harder. uh, And how I understood the statement, I believe I've understood it rightly, at least in essence, is that as we progress in Krishna consciousness, we get tests that are more and more difficult. You know, it's just like in any subject, mathematics, you know, as you progress in your study, the tests become more difficult. But if, you know, if you're doing your homework and developing your skills, passing the tests isn't harder, even though the subject of the tests are more difficult. So I think that is the case.
Actually, there's a pleasure too in just being able to have skills you can exercise.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't, what is it? If you don't use it, you lose it. So that keeps us, that always keeps us fresh and alert. Those tests. I heard, I'm no expert, but I've heard that in experimental schools where they don't give tests, the students don't learn as much, because the tests actually help you to focus. I mean, even in, you know, VIHE and MIHE, they have tests. Because it helps the students to focus. It's a challenge that they're encouraged to meet, which is good for them. So Krishna also gives tests. Although the tests may take various shapes, forms and shapes, I think the ultimate test is, are you going to choose Krishna or Maya? And then these tests are preparation for the final exam, which is the most difficult, which is the time of death. And if we pass that test, then we graduate from the material world. Of course, if we're really in Krishna consciousness, we're only externally in the material world. But if we pass the final exam of remembering Krishna at the time of death, then we go to Krishna. So this is a really great opportunity for us to practice. Srila Prabhupada said, practice makes perfect, even in spiritual life. This is a great opportunity for us to practice. By practice, 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 practice. Eventually, by the mercy of the Lord and the superior devotees, we'll become perfect in the sense of expert. Or perfect. So, I wish you all the best. Pray for your blessings and look forward to another great adventure in Krishna consciousness, or I should say in the effort to develop Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.
The stage developed as Krishna is called ruchi. That's the word for taste, actually. You have a taste. And the characteristic of ruchi, the taste, is for the activities of devotional service. The next stage, asakti, also means, well, it means a strong taste, like addiction. Asakti has Krishna as its object. But ruchi, the object of the activities of devotional service. And when that stage develops, when you have an opportunity for devotional activity and some opportunity for sense gratification, you just rather do the devotional activity. You don't have to preach to yourself. So this is, you know, you give yourself a little class. you just rather do it. The other thing that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about ruchi, which is really interesting, and I've been thinking about it. He said, when ruchi arises, one can perform the activities of devotional service, or can perform bhajan, without feeling the slightest fatigue. That's what he says. And sometimes, even if we're not that advanced, when we are doing something like japa intensely enough, we can get a glimpse of this. What it seems to me to be is that instead of taking energy to chant the holy name, you get energy from the holy name. It supplies you. It's like a mid-air refueling for an Air Force jet or something. It's just, so you get energy, and therefore you don't feel the slightest fatigue. There's mental fatigue, there's physical fatigue, and I imagine some of the body needs rest. Maybe something like, you see little children when they play. They just play. They're so into playing, they just play and they play and they play. Now, obviously, somewhere they have to get tired, but they don't know they're tired. If you're a parent, you have to, like... or they just play and play and play, and then all of a sudden... crash, you know? they start crying first. But in this, so something like that, except what we see that happens is that, of course, like the six Goswamis or like Haridas Thakur, they simply did seem to get like all kinds of energy from their devotional service, and they did not need to eat, they did not need to rest, they could carry on practically 24 hours a day maybe wouldn't even take rest at night. Like Prabhupada sometimes, he would take what he called snaps. He would have the ability to because he slept very little at night, he rose very early to do his writing work, like at 2 a.m. or 1 a.m. or something, right? And keyhole flashed into shape. So he did not take rest long at night. But what he had the ability to do was, in the middle of the day, he would just sit back, close his eyes. He called it a snap, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes of like a little rest, and then keep on going. And that also takes advancement, just to be able to like have that much control that you could like turn it off, you know. Otherwise, you know, you need to fall asleep and your mind is agitated. But I saw with Prabhupada, he had this ability, you know, just to turn on a dime. I remember once when he was in Philadelphia, he was he was explaining to me that it was after the Rath Yatra, and he'd gotten a lot of cash donations, and he called me in and explained to me that he wanted me to take this cash to the bank and do a wire transfer to a bank account in Los Angeles. It's where Prabhupada kept his Dakshin money, and then it became the Mayapur Vrindavan Trust. So they want me to do this wire transfer. And it was really, really interesting, because when Prabhupada explained to me how to do this, it was the clearest, most precise directions I'd ever gotten from anybody in my life. I mean, he dropped everything else and was totally into explaining this to me and making sure I understood it. It was just extraordinary. He just this focus on one thing entirely. In the course of this, he discovered a mistake in the count book that was his secretary or had made, and he called him in and then fixed the account book, and then he turned to another subject. And just that's over, and this, like a lot of times, you get instructions from people. They'll be doing two things at once, it's just that was the kind of mentality I think that allowed Prabhupada to turn it off and turn it on again. And that seems to me to also be related to the ability at Ruchi to fully concentrate the mind and to actually reach that point where we get energy from chanting. It enlivens us and energizes us. And of course, if people say to me, how do you know when you've chanted good rounds? I have to say, well, when I really don't want to stop, then we know, and we can't, whew, that's over. You don't want to stop. Well, a nice thing about chanting 64 rounds is because of the demand on the time, it is the main thing in our day. We, just to make it a little easier, we stop talking. It's the main thing. And what should be really carried over to the ordinary day where we chant 16 rounds is also to keep that 16 rounds at a highest priority. I always run into difficulty when I've got so many things to do and somewhere I've got to fit my rounds in. That does not work. And if you plan to fit them in later, the later window of opportunity tends to close up. I mean, Prabhupada's schedule is wonderful, and I think it probably worked very well in India before 1960, when you had 3-hour lunches with a nap, when people just didn't work like maniacs. But now, I go downtown and I see these corporate people eating lunches standing up like horses. They just say, 20 minutes, or at their work, one big office problem is getting all the sandwich particles out of your keyboard. Because people don't even stop to eat. They're so driven. And then, of course, many people, ISKCON is an international, multinational corporation, and many people work at multinational corporations, and so, the day sometimes starts at 4 in the morning and goes on, the stock market, some stock market is always going all the time, and people having conference calls and stuff like that, and what time is it in Tokyo and all this stuff, it's really like that. It's a little harder to be that way. And so if you want to have a thing where I'll chant in the evening, that I've learned not to I tried to do that, and that last 4 rounds before taking rest, let me forget it. That time, that half an hour disappears, just because something else happens. So it's hard to have a regular schedule like that. If you can do it, it's fantastic. But it's hard for a lot of people. So I just think, but what one has to do is, first of all, really try to do as many as possible, as early as possible, at least 4. But then just keep it as if it's just an important thing that I have to get done. Somehow we manage to eat, so we can manage to chant 16 rounds if it's really important, and so that if there's an opportunity to chant 2 rounds, take it. You could do something else, use it fruitfully for some other activity, but take it. because it just really has to have this priority. So, you know, those of us who live in temples, we have this real luxury. There's this time in the morning that's set aside for japa, hopefully, and that people who live and work don't have that. So, we should at least for my job. You're on call 24 hours a day, practically. You really have to take advantage of it. When we're doing this time, when it is set aside, this is really a rare opportunity, and so we should really try to get the most out of it, In the beginning, I find the first thing is really concentration. Whenever I start japa, almost always I have to begin in a mechanical way. So fix the mind wanders, bring it back. Fix the mind wanders, bring it back. And then after a little practice at that with some diligence, there's a click. It's almost you've somehow there's some now connection there, and I have the sense that now at least there's a clear at least nam abhasa somehow because I can feel it. I can feel it. I can't describe the feeling, but what I imagine is now that the holy name is, you know, rooting its way through my subtle body like some drain cleaner or something, or cleaning out the dirty part. I don't have to watch it do it, you know, but it's working. It's cleaning out the dirty parts. I even think it's arranging the neurons in my brain. It has to be. I'm sure there's physical and physiological changes in the brain, and we want to make those permanent. Brain structure. Prabhupada said, you become a devotee, your intelligence increases. So that has to be there. So we, and in one sense, just by maintaining attention and staying connected with the holy name, giving it the importance it's due, you know, things are working, things are happening. A lot of times, I don't feel the effects of a 64-round day until the next day. And then I can see something has happened. So this is a treatment of our disease condition by this medicine. It's like some, you know, like drain cleaner or some medical drug that goes into your blood veins and cleans out the buildup of cholesterol and all that stuff, you know. So we have to take it like that. Another way that I sometimes achieve concentration, I'm praying when I say, speak of the holy name, please engage me in your service. And of course we've seen so many different ways you can say that, because it can be some particular service on a very high level. But maybe my service right now is in fact to chant the holy names. Please engage me in your service. Please help me pay attention to you. Please help me develop feelings for you. So to me this kind of develops a concentration where I'm praying by means of the holy name. This is the instrumental case in Sanskrit. By means of the holy name. What am I praying for? Well, I'm praying to the holy name. That's this Nam Prabhu, as they say. I'm praying to the holy name. That's the dative case. And what am I praying for? I'm praying for the holy name. That's the ablative case. So that kind of achieves a certain focus of concentration. That helps me sometimes in this way. Praying by means of the holy name, through the holy name, for the holy name. We can sometimes, you know, reach this zone where we get energy and enthusiasm simply from the holy name. It's like a big generator of all energy, right? The holy name is Janmadasyataha, that from which everything comes. So loaded with inexhaustible supplies of everything. And there it is, right? Right. I mean, you know, we are granted tremendous access by Mahaprabhu to Param Brahma. Just on a philosophical level, and that access then it's changing us. We do this few basic things, and then it starts to change us, and that's what we want, to undergo those changes at the hands of the holy name. Okay.